13. Paul's still in this section about how we are to live our lives now that we've come to faith in Christ. What does it look like to be living a life of living sacrifice? How is that worship to God expressed on a daily basis? He's talked about serving in the church. He's talked about using your spiritual gifts. He's talked about a long list of general things, loving one another genuinely, not being reproachful to those who wrong us or seeking to revenge ourselves. Oh, that whole fun list we got into there in chapter 12, and now in chapter 13 he starts off, "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God." That short verse we covered last week, a lot packed into it, because it lays down the principles that God is the sole, ultimate, and inherent authority. Nothing else exists that has total, inherent authority. Everything else that has authority is delegated authority, meaning that God has, to some degree, delegated responsibility to the individual or institution. And so when God tells us to submit to government, he's not telling us to submit to government because it is itself an inherent and total authority. He is telling us to submit to government because he has instituted and delegated authority to it for a specific purpose. Now, we also said that since delegated authorities are not ultimate authorities, it also means that they themselves have to answer for how they use that authority. When you were raising your children, or some of us still have kids at home, and did you ever leave the younger ones in the care of the older ones? Well, sure, when they're of the right age and you know that that child's responsible enough. I mean, some like 21-year-olds, I probably still wouldn't live. Oh, he's not even in. Oh, he's back there doing attendance for Gary. So I'm going to tease you, and you're not even going to be here to hear me. You're listening. Okay, he's hearing it. But when you come home from whatever it was you were doing, going out to dinner or going to see a show or whatever it was, you come home and how did things go? And now, of course, you have to say to the little ones, or to the older ones, say, did the little ones listen to you? Did they do what they were supposed to do? And if they didn't, well, now we have to deal with the little ones. You know, I left your older brother in charge of you. That means you should have obeyed. You should have listened to your older brother. And of course they say, but he's my brother. He's not mom and dad. I don't have to listen to him. You don't have to listen to him because he's your brother, but you did have to listen to him because mom and dad said so. Mom and dad delegated some authority, and we transfer that authority to that person. Well, God has done that in government. He has done that in several areas of life. The first one he ever did it with was the family. Moms and dads, husbands, wives, and kids. That's the first institution of God whereby he delegated authority, and it was through that structure that God was ruling in the world. And so Adam and Eve had their children, they raised them, and that family structure existed and continued. And it was through the family structure that God was instituting his commands to be fruitful and multiply and to subdue the earth. Well, later on, he did institute human government. There's other institutions that God has delegated some of his authority to. He talks about being submissive to employers in that relationship. He talks about being submissive to church leaders in that relationship. But all of those relationships mean that the person who is exercising the authority must recognize the limitations of it and the appropriate uses of it, because we will have to answer to God for our use of that. I can stand here today knowing that I've been delegated by God several areas of authority. In my home as the husband, I'm the leader of my home. That doesn't mean I get my way all the time, and that doesn't mean everything goes exactly as I say. But it means I'm responsible for how I guide my home forward. That means I'm responsible when things don't go well. That's my responsibility, to make sure they should go well. And so I bear responsibility as a husband. I bear responsibility as a father. And all of the commands of authority that God has given to fathers to teach and nurture and train the children, that weighs on me. I stand here as a pastor in this church. You guys voted that. So a part of it is that democratic process of installing a pastor through the consent of the people. We went through that process, and I stand here as your pastor And so I know that I have that authority, not just from you, but ultimately from God to shepherd this church. That's a lot of authority. But that means I have to answer for all of those things. So that when I stand before God, I know I'm going to have to give an account. How did I exercise my authority as a husband? How did I exercise my authority as a father? How did I exercise my authority as a pastor? And I'll have to give an account for those things. So when God tells us to be subject to governing authorities, because there's no authority except from God, there is a recognition that all authorities have to answer to God, and that includes government. And throughout history, God has exercised his rulership of this world in some forms through human governments. And yes, they're fallen. Yes, they're broken much of the time, but they do accomplish good. And that's what he's going to turn his attention to. So after telling us to be subject to them and teaching us about chains of authority and understanding those chains of authority, we know that we as individuals have to answer to God first, and every other authority is secondary. So that if any authority attempts to usurp God's position in my life, I know I'm not bound before God to do what that authority tells me. And so if, as a pastor, if I stand up here and say, all right, we're going to install a little statue here on the communion table, and next week I want everybody to come up here and genuflect before it and say, you know, this is my God who brought me out of Egypt. Your right response would be to... that would be first, laugh. Second, out. I'm out of here. We are relieving you of any sense of authority over this congregation, right? Because even as a pastor, my authority is not absolute. As a government, authority is not absolute. So we do have to recognize those chains of authority. And when government tries to usurp its authority, then we run into some touchy issues of what is the Christian's response. Paul's not primarily answering those issues right here. He's pretty much just telling us that in general, we are to be submissive people. We're to be a people, we're the ones that the police don't have to worry about because we're not violating the laws. We're generally speaking peaceful people. We're not breaking the laws. We're not causing disturbances and uprisings. And that's primarily what Paul's talking about here. There are other passages in Scripture that can instruct us about what to do when government begins usurping God's authority. And those are, as I said last week, those are things that I think we have to think through as Christians living in this day and age, because it's not always abundantly clear that our government knows its limits. And so we do have to think through those things. It's not the first time this has happened in history. It won't be the last time it's happened in history. There, as we've been studying church history on Sunday nights, it's abundantly apparent that there have been many times throughout history that the government and leaders in our world have thought that they themselves had all authority, and they don't. And Christians have had to wrestle through that. Some wonderful stuff written by people during the Reformation. If you want, I can give you some recommendations on those. There's some good stuff being written now by believers who are thinking through this stuff. So we'll continue on here and just saying that it is tough. We do have to think through some of those issues. When we're called to submit, just understand it's to submit to actual authority. It's not to submit to usurped authority, right? So Paul's going to continue on. Why is it that we should be submissive people? Obviously, because that's part of our submission to God. When he delegates authority, my submission to my government is a reflection of my submission to God. So that I don't like the speed limits, but God said be submissive. And if I choose to not submit to the speed limit, then I'm not going to berate the officer who pulls me over and says, why were you going that fast? I say, well, officer, I just didn't feel like submitting to the speed limits today. You may hand me my ticket now. We are supposed to be submissive people because it's a reflection of our submission to God. But secondly, verse 2, therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. So as we goof around and kind of joke about speeding tickets and things, it is a reality that even God acknowledges that he is using human government to dispense judgment on wrongdoing. So that ticket you get is a discipline of God to teach us not to do what's wrong. And it's a principle that Paul's going to lay out here, is that since God has delegated authority to human governments, we have to recognize that human governments do have the authority to dispense punishment. They do have the authority to dispense disciplinary action against wrongdoing. God gave them that, and that is for a purpose. It is for a good thing. If we try to resist that, just like when we try to resist parents, we are actually resisting God. When we try to overthrow government or think that we can overthrow it and life would go better. I know we usually think of that in terms of specific things like, oh boy, if just government would stop doing X, well, maybe life would be better. But what would life with no government be like? Or as a wise man once told me, any government is better than none at all. Even the most despotic and tyrannical forms of government are better than anarchy. And that's hard to understand. You say the China's communist regime, North Korea, that's better than anarchy? And the answer is yes. Why is government, some government, better than anarchy? Because of the human heart. Without any external restraint, what would be the expression of human sinfulness in the world? It'd be horrible to behold. We tend to turn our eyes away from that because we live in free America, which is great. It's been full of blessing for many, many years. We hope it continues that way. We pray God that it will. But without some form of external restraint, the human heart would run crazy into its wickedness. I mean, look at what it is doing today, even with human government. And so God is at work through human government, as corrupt as it is, as off base as it sometimes is, as much as it tries to usurp God's authority, God is still using it for his purpose. And that purpose, one of those purposes, is as a restraint to human sinfulness. And so God institutes human government. Some places live in very simple government, some live in more complex forms, but God has instituted it. Those authorities are from him. And so if we try to destroy the concept of human government, and it's the word Paul uses there, whoever resists, that word resists means to actively fight against, to array yourself in battle against government. So as much as I joke about speed limits, he's not really talking about breaking speed limits. Now, if you break a speed limit, you're probably going to get in trouble. And if you do, I would again say, submit. Don't give the officer a hard time. He's just doing his job. Take the ticket, pay it, and move on. But he's talking here in verse 2 about those who are arraying themselves in battle. You might use the term revolutionaries. You might use the term anarchists, terrorists, people that are trying to tear down a system of government. And that's what he's talking about. And in Paul's day, the Roman world was rife with small little groups of people that just wanted to destroy the Roman form of rule. Paul says, don't get involved in those things, because God is the one who's instituted human government. And I can imagine some of the Christians in Rome saying, you think God is using Nero for good? And Paul would say, yeah, because that's the glory of our God. He can use even despotic, tyrannical, rampant, wicked people like Nero, and he can use them for his good. Think back to Daniel chapter 4, I think it is, when all that Nebuchadnezzar was doing and commanding his whole kingdom to worship himself. That's what that idol was all about, by the way. Daniel's response was, the Most High rules in the kingdoms of men and sets over them the basest of men. So Nebuchadnezzar, what did God just call you? He called you base, lowly, humble. You're really not all that much, Nebuchadnezzar, even though you want the whole world to worship you as a god. And the same thing holds true today, that whatever person is inhabiting the office, God is at work to do good through the government. And so those that try to tear that down are actually resisting what God has established. And quick show of hands, How many of you want to be fighting God? How many people does that go well for? None. Now, we understand that many rulers throughout the history of the world have actually been trying to use the authority that God gave them in their governments to fight against God himself. Psalm chapter 2, why do the heathen rage and the nations imagine a vain thing? Let's cast his cords asunder. That whole psalm is about the raging of unfaithful kings against God's own rulership. We know it's true that very often our leaders think that they can be gods themselves. They can be the one that does the total protecting. They can do the one that does the total providing. They can do the one that determines what's true and not. They can be the ones that dictate to you what's right and wrong. Well, those are all evidences of a government usurping God's authority over its people. But is God still at work? Yes, he is. Very much. And so, don't resist. As Christians, we're to be submissive people. We're not to be the ones trying to join the groups that are trying to topple our governments. Now, that's not the same thing as being involved in a group that is trying to pressure or vote for the people you want to see in office or get information out or whatever. I always encourage us as believers, be involved. God's given us great freedom and capability here in this country. Don't squander it. Get out and vote. Serve in your community. Spread information about candidates that you think represent biblical values. Be involved in that. That's not trying to topple government. That's trying to work government. Trying to work through it, the system that God has given us. Now, he says there at the end of this verse, if God's appointed government, and if we try to resist government or topple it over, there is a punishment for that. Those who resist will incur judgment. Because God partly is at work through government to judge sin. And so there is a judgment. Verse 3, for rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval. Because you all know, going back to our speeding analogy again, that when you're driving down the freeway and you pass the police officer sitting on the side of the road, how do you feel when you know you're going 7-8 miles an hour over? But if you've got your cruise control set to the speed limit, you look at that guy, well, boy, I hope he's having a good day. But if you're not, then you pass by him, you look down, and all of a sudden you're tapping your brake, like, oh, I hope he doesn't see me decelerating too quickly. If you don't want to be afraid, do what's right. Do what's good. We, especially as Christians, already know what's good. We don't have to wait for a government to tell us what is good and right before we do it, because we have God's law. And if we're ruled first by God's law, then we are going to be some of the best citizens in any society. Because we're already going to be doing what's right. But this does tell us that God is at work through governments to help us know what is good and bad. To help us know what's right and wrong. And sometimes when we do wrong, God uses government to discipline us and bring judgment. By the way, that word judgment is not always like, excuse me, not always, it didn't go away. Ethan, remind me to edit out my coughing fits when I put this up. I don't think I usually do. I forgot where I was. Rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who's in authority, then do what's good. God is at work through our governments to help teach us what is right and wrong. He's at work for some of his own purposes, some of which he tells us, some of which he doesn't, through our human governments. But part of that is to keep human conduct in check. And so, that's where I was. Judgment is not always a hellfire condemnation sort of judgment. Judgment can be a fatherly discipline. So yes, there are times God might use human government to discipline his people. Whether you yourself have actively disobeyed a law or whether it's just in general, God might use governments to discipline the church. Okay? So government authority is supposed to be used to punish evil. Now this is going to take us to the other side of the coin. So if we're talking about us submitting to government, and that's primarily what Paul's talking about, there is another side of this coin, is what should the government be doing? Punishing what's evil. The government should be punishing what's evil. So what happens when a government no longer punishes what's evil, but instead starts promoting what is evil? Again, this puts us as believers in a tough spot. We want to submit to our government. But if our government is actively promoting what is evil, then we find ourselves in a position where we have to say, no, I'm not going to help you promote that. Once again, I'm not going to try to overthrow government because you're doing it, but I'm not going to help you promote it. And so there is a built-in assumption here that the government he's talking about is punishing what's bad. Verse 3 continues this, "For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. So would you have no fear of the one who's in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval." So those two kind of counterpointing assumptions are built into this, that the government is punishing what's bad and promoting what is good. But once again, we do find that often throughout history, human governments will flip that around. They'll begin promoting what's evil, and they'll begin punishing what's good. And therein lies the predicament that Christians find themselves often, such as North Korea. What happens when the government tells you are not allowed to instruct your children out of the Bible? And if you do, you'll be sent off to some re-education camp and your children will be transferred to another family. Those are tough situations. What happens when the government tells you may not gather together for church? You know, throughout history, the answer of the church has been, we'll gather anyway. But it's a tough situation because we don't want to incur the wrath of our government. We know what Paul's going to tell us here. He's God's servant for your good, but if you do wrong, be afraid, because he does not bear the sword in vain. We know that the government carries behind it a power and a threat of force. We don't want to run up against that. That's a right attitude. But it at times does mean that when our government doesn't recognize what God has put it here to do, that it's going to make life difficult for us who are trying to serve God first. And so there are questions we have to think through as believers. But I think the principles Paul lays down here are helpful for us, as he, especially back at the beginning when he says the authorities, submit to the authorities. No government has the authority to tell you can't train your children, because God already told you to do it. So if you resist that, you're not resisting the government, they're resisting God. But God is at work. We understand. Sometimes because government is made up of fallen, sinful human people, but sometimes government becomes a means to wickedness and not a means to good. Paul's talking about when government's functioning the way that it should. We submit. Now, that necessarily is going to mean that there are going to be times when they're not actively violating a command that God gave us or telling us not to do something God told us to do. We just don't like it. Like speed limits. You know what drives me nuts? And I'll just share this. Stop signs in parking lots. I can obviously see and make sure there's nobody coming, so why do I have to stop there? My wife will tell you. It's like, I just, That's my little rebellious side that comes out, I guess. And, you know, what's that, Arlene? Would not. Well, sometimes I don't. I'm sorry to admit it. Well, I should admit it, but hey. What I find a sinful delight in doing, I'm just sinful or not, but stores that put up, like, high-efficiency vehicle parking spots, I park our van there. And here's my reasoning. I'm carrying 9 people. So my gas mileage per person is way higher than that guy driving a car, even if he gets 40 miles a gallon, but there's only one person in that car. So very efficient, right? But that's true. That's not law. That's not law. That's, yeah. That's like someone that puts a sign up that says, Eagle fans parking only, right? Only Pittsburgh Steelers fans can park here. That's not law, right? That speed limit, yeah, that's law. All right. Duly passed laws we should be submitting to. All right, so government should be promoting what is good. They should be punishing what is bad. And if we are submitting to that, then he says we're not going to have any fear of judgment. We're not going to have any fear of being disciplined by God by our government because we're doing what's right. So God is at work through government to help us know what is right and wrong and to restrain sin in the world. Verse 4, we have to recognize again, he keeps coming back to this point because it's something that we so often fight against. He is what? In verse 4, he is God's servant. Does it say he's God's servant as long as he recognizes he's God's servant? He is God's servant. You know what's really funny about this is how many governmental people throughout the world just chafe at that thought. They're exercising all of the power and authority they think they have, trying to prove that they're not God's servant, but nothing can stop them from being God's servant. Because who is the king over all kings? Who is the Lord over all other lords? The governor of governors, the president of presidents, the legislator of legislators. It is our God. And what does he do when the kings of the earth say, let's cast his cords asunder? Let's reject his rulership over us. He that sits in the heavens will laugh. That smile that comes to your face inadvertently when your little kids, you tell them to do something and they stomp their feet, throw themselves on the ground and throw a fit, exerting all of the force of their little wills against you. And you standing there as the mature adult realize that fit is going to accomplish nothing. I'm still going to have them pick up their toys. But that's the laugh that God gives to all the human governments that resist his rulership over the world, that try to usurp his authority and take his position. He'll laugh. He is God's servant for your good. Don't forget this. God is using government for good. Even corrupt ones. Sometimes we have to let them answer to God for what they're doing and let him correct the situation. But they will answer. And our God, who is able to level everything and straighten everything that's crooked, will make right every wrong that is committed in this world. That should be a comfort to us and a terror. Because he's going to make right every wrong that's been committed against me, but he is also going to require for every wrong that I've committed. But he's able to do that because God alone knows all things. He knows every motivation that has spurred the human heart. He knows every thought that has passed through every tyrant ruler's head. And he knows every thought that's passed through every peasant's head as well. Because he knows all things, he is able to balance all things and judge in righteousness in a way that no earthly court can do, in a way that no human institution can ever achieve. That's why we're not supposed to try. We're supposed to judge only on the things that are totally and easily discernible, things that we've seen. But motivations of the heart, not necessarily our prerogative. Well, he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. So what kind of crimes require the sword? We call them capital crimes. Crimes which require the death penalty. So Paul's, as we said earlier, we're kind of joking around with the speed limit thing. It has some application to that, but primarily what Paul's talking about are those sorts of crimes that require a death penalty in response. Going back again to Genesis chapter 9, God instituted human government to preserve human life. Because of the violence and the bloodshed that the sinful human heart will exert, human government restrains those. So he doesn't bear the sword in vain. It means that government is supposed to be exercising that power of life and death in order to preserve human life. But those who take life are supposed to be executed. Of course, after every proper means of judicial review, fair trials, all of those things are built into this. Of course, the Roman system didn't have much for fair trial. Be thankful for the freedoms you have here in this country, by the way. Quick and speedy trial. Trial before a jury. You realize how important that is? You're not trying to prove to the government that you didn't do it or did do it. You're trying to prove to a jury of your own peers. He's an avenger. I'm sorry, he is the servant of God. Notice he said that again. So you see how often this keeps coming up? I think the Roman people needed this just as much as we do. I mean, you're living in the shadow of Caesar. They probably needed constant reaffirmation that, yes, God is at work through Caesar and all of the horrible things that he can do. God is still at work through that. Submit to it. He's God's servant. He's an avenger who carries out wrath on the wrongdoer. So God has built into this world punishments. There is an eternal punishment. There is a hell. There is judgment for sin that awaits each individual. But God is also at work in this world. And he has built into this world some of the judgments and condemnations that come along with doing wrong. So, therefore, verse 5, after establishing all that, government's good, God is at work through government, government has its authority from God, government is a servant of God, therefore, one must be in subjection. So we come back full circle to where we started at the beginning of chapter 13, living sacrifices. Those of us who recognize Christ's rule in our lives, how should we be worshiping God daily? Well, yes, by loving one another in the church, by serving with our spiritual gifts, by not exacting revenge, and by submitting to our government in every way we can. Yes, there's things we can't submit. Yes, there are times we should say no. There might even be times where we have to flee. But generally speaking, we should be submissive people. Therefore, one should be in subjection. Two reasons. Not only to avoid God's wrath, which is an obvious choice. I mean, I don't want to do wrong because I don't want to get punished for it. Isn't that good motivation? Yes, it's good motivation. I want to do the right thing because I don't want to receive the punishment that comes from doing wrong. Yes, there's more motivation to it. I want to do right because I love him. He loves what's right. I want to love what's right. Therefore, I want to do what's right because I love him. But also, yeah, I want to avoid that punishment. But also, notice what he adds here at the end of verse 5. Also, for the sake of conscience. You know what? If ultimately my whole life is about serving God, my whole life is about my relationship with my Creator and my Heavenly Father and my Savior, my Redeemer, my friend, then I want to know that I'm right with Him. I want to know that my actions here are something that bring a smile to His face. And so Paul says, be in subjection, because it answers the call of a conscience. It lets me know that, all right, I've done what's right. Whatever my government might be trying to accomplish through this action, when I submit to it, as long as it's not usurping God's authority over me, then that is something that is well-pleasing to God. And I know that my conscience can be at rest, knowing I did the right thing. And I was submissive. Now he's going to hit us where it hurts. Because he's talked in general, right? These are generalisms. We should submit to government. But look at what he says in verse 6. For because of this, you should also... Okay, everybody just cover your eyes and hold your head down. Kind of grunt a little bit when you say it. What else should we do? Pay taxes. Oh, wow. Tell me to go the speed limit. Okay, maybe I can put up with that. Tell me to stop in parking lots, and okay, maybe I can do that. Pay taxes. Ugh, Paul, now you're getting me where it hurts, right there in the old wallet, right? Ouch. But he does say it. Pay your taxes. The authorities are ministers of God. See how, again, he says it? Servants of God, servants of God. They're authorities delegated by God. They are ministers of God. The thought here is that if they are ministers of God, then they, don't choke when we say this, they deserve to be supported for the work that they do. And I know, we could all throw up our hands and say, what work? They hardly ever do anything except to involve themselves in our lives. And why would we want to pay it? But God says so. As ministers of God, they deserve to be compensated for the work that they do. The work of government requires money. It requires funding. And so we as believers should understand, don't get too bent out of shape about paying taxes. Now, once again, we could balance out this whole side by saying, is there a just level of taxation and an unjust level of taxation? Absolutely. Can we exercise all of the freedoms we possess in this country to lobby for lower taxes and just levels of taxation? And should we? Yes, we should. Because at some level, high taxation simply becomes slavery. Because now I have to spend all my time working to pay who? My government. Now, do they deserve to be paid? Yes. Does the work of government need money? Yes. So in general, the basic principle is pay your taxes. Don't get bent out of shape about having to pay taxes. And if there's an opportunity to see lower taxes, by all means, take it. But this reason, pay your taxes. The authorities are ministers of God attending to this very thing. So verse 7, pay to all what is owed to them. Now what did he say? Pay to all to them. I want you to notice this word. What is owed? Not what isn't owed. You know, in some countries, you get pulled over by the policeman. You may not have been doing anything wrong, but guess what he's going to say? I'm writing out a ticket. If you don't want me to write out this ticket, then perhaps $50 might cover the fees associated with not writing out this ticket. And you just fork over the $50 because it's a whole lot cheaper than paying the whatever he's going to write the ticket for. And bribery is commonplace. Praise the Lord, that's not commonplace here. I'm sure it's tried. I'm sure that it happens sometimes. We know that sometimes our politicians and leaders get caught accepting it and doing it. But for the most part, it's not the rule. Praise God for that. Because what does Proverbs say about a bribe? A bribe turns the heart of the rulers. All right, bribe perverts justice. Bribes are bad things. So, pay what is owed to them. So if you feel like something is being unjustly taken from you, do you have the right to say something and try to make sure that's done rightly? Yes, you do. That's why we have our legal system. We have means to, what's the word there in the in our Constitution? I'm losing the word. Redress. Yeah, redress of grievances. We have a means to approach our government for redress of grievances. That's a good thing as well. Use it if you need to. Yes, it's expensive, and lawyers are expensive too. But pay what's owed. Pay your taxes, pay your revenues, pay your respect. If for no other reason, if you don't respect the person holding the office, then show respect if for no other reason than that they hold office. That means when we speak to them and we are redressing our grievances, we're not name-calling, we're not insulting, we're not screaming. We can voice our concern in a respectful way. Honor to whom honor. So what's the summation of all Paul's told us here? Not too difficult. Christians, submit to authority. Submit to the government, specifically. Well, I want to pull out just a couple of things that we can do as Christians with our government. So number one, of course, submit to every law which does not violate God's commands. If it violates God's commands, or if it's commanding you to do something God said not to do, or if it's prohibiting you from doing something God said to do, then we'd better be prepared to obey God first and accept any earthly consequences of that. Christians have had to deal with this many times throughout history when they said, you consider whether it's right that we obey you rather than God. And they obeyed God. And yes, it cost them. Yes, the government didn't like it. They were put in chains, they were thrown in prison, sometimes they were executed. But they counted that cost and said service to God is so much more important. My life for God is primary. And so at least I know I'm doing what's right, even if not in the eyes of men. So submit to every law which does not violate God's commands. Advocate for good and just laws. We have a lot of freedoms in this country where we can petition, that's the word, petition our government for redress of grievances. See, I had to quit trying to come up with it. The harder I try to force my brain to come up with those words, the more it locks up. It's like an anti-lock brake system. We are allowed in this country to petition our government, to voice our concerns. That might mean rallies, that might mean signing petitions. Certainly that means participating in voting. As believers in this country, we need to be involved in all of those things, so don't neglect them. It might mean voting for a representative who agrees as much as possible with biblical concepts of law. Find them. They are out there. Even if you think they have no chance of winning, vote for them. They certainly have no chance of winning if nobody votes for them. But put your weight behind them. Run for office if you have the opportunity. We need Christian people influencing our government, don't we? I'll tell you, I don't envy believers trying to get into government right now, but we need them there. And so if you have the means, the time, the capability, the gumption, run for office. We might choke on this one too, but support Christian lawyers. You say, wait, that sounds like a oxymoron. There could be Christian lawyers. Yes, there could be Christian lawyers. There's many of them. Support Christian lawyers who will help you know what is actually required by law and what is not. Kim and I have this experience all the time when homeschooling that even school officials don't know the law. They think they know. And we have to tell them, that's not actually law. You can't require that of us. That's not the law. And they say, well, yeah, we need this document. I said, no, you don't. Let me call my lawyer. Okay. So, support Christian lawyers. I'm not saying you like just send them money or anything, but it's mostly use them when you need them, okay? There's no moral imperative to obey something just because an office holder said to do so. Follow the chains of authority. Do they actually have the authority to issue that command? And that's not even considering, are they violating God's authority? It's, do they have the authority from our system of laws to do it? And if they don't, challenge it. Okay. Number six, here's things we can do. Understand that at times we're going to have to say, no, I will not comply. My conscience will not allow me to do that. Do it respectfully, do it calmly. Expect earthly consequences and be ready for them. But I do think that we're entering a time where this is going to become more and more necessary. As Christians, just simply have to say, no. No, I won't do that. It's not easy. You'll have to think through very deeply what things you will say no for and what you're willing to give on a little bit. But we need to do that work. Pray for your government fervently. We're commanded to do this in 1 Timothy 2, 1 through 3. Pray that God would be at work through it to keep our society safe from the rampages of sin. Pray that God would be at work for good and blessing in the lives of those who hold our offices. Pray that God would bring them to a knowledge of Christ. Pray that they would continue to enact just laws that allow us to be free. But pray for our government. But finally, remember, God is accomplishing good through human government. Even when they're corrupt, even when they're running amok, He is still accomplishing good through them. Don't forget that. Our God's in control. Never is He out of control. And one of the great things to remember is what God is accomplishing through all this. You know, we know that on one hand, in the immediate term, He's restraining sin. He's teaching us good and bad. He's teaching us right and wrong. But He is also preparing something. Psalm 2 talks about this. After the heathen rage, after God laughs at them, God looks at His Son and says, "Ask of Me, and I will give you the nations as your inheritance." This world is being prepared by the Father for His Son. And one day he's going to say, "It's all ready, son. Here it is. It's all yours. Now rule it." And all of the nations of the world will bow before Christ. And all the peoples of the world will acknowledge that he's the king. And then we'll have perfect government. Then there will be no usurping of authority, because how can you usurp authority when all authority already belongs to you? Then there will be no unjust laws, because how can the perfectly just Son of God pass an unjust law? Then there will be no need for redress of grievances, because he will never grieve us. And so all of the time, while we're walking along this pilgrimage through our lives, and we say, "Oh, government, look at it," remember, God's preparing it for his Son. So Christians, be subject. Be submissive in every area you can. But also be strong. Because there's going to be times when we as believers have to say, "No. No, I won't." Until the day Jesus reigns. So let's focus our attention as we finish up here on that thought. We'll sing this final song. "Jesus shall reign. From north to south the princes meet to pay their homage at his feet. Won't that be a glorious day?"